Hello, Tea Crew, and welcome to this brand new episode of Tea Talk with Sha. Today, we're getting into all the trending topics all over social media and the internet, and we're also going to be doing a deep dive into the Oscars, so you're not going to want to miss this episode. Stay tuned. All right, Tea Crew, I hope you guys are hanging in there on this Monday. Daylight savings is literally beating me in the face with the ugly stick. So I just want to put up top, if I mess up somebody's name or I get something a little bit, you know, incorrect, forgive me. My brain is barely functioning today, but I did not want to miss an episode. So let's get into this. Let's kick it off. All right, so the first topic here, Ali Lotti is selling Juice WRLD's dreads and clothes. So she is the ex-girlfriend of the deceased rapper Juice WRLD, and you know, they had an on again, off again, really wild relationship. But fans are appalled that she is selling his personal items for high prices at that to make money. Now, when I first saw this, I was just like, well, I mean, they had an on-again, off-again relationship. And with the inflation and everything that's going on, we don't know what this girl is going through. She might be a week away from homelessness or, you know, something like that that really, you know, is affecting her to the point where she's like, I'm doing what I have to do, not what I want to do. You know, I liken it to when people pawn a wedding ring or something like that, and it's like some kind of precious jewelry. It's like you don't want to pawn it, but you're doing what you have to do because you know at the end of the day, there's no way around the situation that you need the food or you need the housing or you need, you know, whatever you need, make a car payment so you can have transportation. It's like these are things that you need, and it's like you want the ring, you want the symbol of, you know, your time with him and his clothes and stuff at the end of the day. But it's just like, all right, you know, that might not be something that she can afford to hold on to right now. I think instead of judging Ali, that, you know, friends and family of Juice WRLD should offer to be like, listen, you know, I don't know what kind of terms you were on with him, but if you are willing to sell his personal items, maybe things have gotten really bad for you, like reach out to her. Maybe someone can help her with a job or, you know, a loan for the time being. But I just think that if she was going to do something petty like that, she would have done it right away. So for her to do it now, I just feel like it's because she has to. That's just my personal opinion. I don't really know the girl and or the situation, but I saw a lot of you guys commenting on that and really, you know, talking a lot about whether this is ethical or not. And so I was like, all right, I'll talk about it. But I think she's just doing it out of desperation. I don't think she's doing it to be malicious. All right, let's talk about this next topic here. Now, this woman also went viral. This happened a couple weeks ago, but I was talking to my husband last night and I was like, you know what? I really, really, really want to talk about this on the podcast because this is something that I think people don't talk about enough. So this young lady was invited on a date. It looks like it may have been a first date or early in the talking stage of a relationship. And she was told that she was going to a basketball game. So she dressed up, you know, ready to possibly be courtside, right? We don't know who the guy was. He never kind of came forward. But for all intents and purposes in the story, we can tell that she assumed that this guy was a baller, or she really thought this guy was a baller. And so she thought she'd be sitting courtside or very close to the court. So she got what I would say are regular seats, like in the 100 section, not all the way in the nosebleeds and like the 300s, which is like the upper rafters, but in the 100s, which is like the first elevated seats away from the court. So depending on where you sit in the 100s, these are very good seats because, you know, the beginning rows of the 100s are right there by the folding chairs, which are, you know, the best seats or whatever. So she's up in the 100 section. She moves away from him several seats, and she basically just walks away from the tickets that he purchased to go sit in some empty seats so she can record herself on TikTok. Now, I feel like she was upset because she didn't get what she expected, But at the same time, it did come off very bratty. It did come off very like ungrateful for the situation. Obviously, she came into the situation not having to pay for anything. The tickets were provided for her. She's on a date. But the tickets just weren't the quality that she wanted. I think that, sometimes when it comes to having high standards in a relationship, a lot of people are worried about the wrong things. You're worried about how it looks, you're worried about the pictures, you're worried about how much money they're spending on you. When I think if you're looking, this is only if you're looking for a real relationship, you should be worried about the things of substance, like are they ethical? Are they loyal? Do they really genuinely love you, or are they just, infatuated with your look or how you guys look together? These are the things I think you should focus on. Where you sit at a basketball game, not so much. Like, honestly, if you felt like it was against your aesthetic to sit that high, you don't have to take pictures, on the date. You could have taken pictures in the lobby. You could have taken, you know what I mean? Like, there's things you could have done if you didn't really want to post where your seats were. But to embarrass that man and literally make a TikTok while you were still there, and he's like calling you and he doesn't even know where you went because you just like broke out of the situation. It's just like, I don't know. To me, it's really giving, I don't know. It's just giving brattiness, immaturity, ungratefulness. Like it's not what's up. And I saw a lot of women in the comments like, yeah, get your bag, sprinkle, sprinkle. Now, this is the thing. Sprinkle, sprinkle lady on TikTok, she basically promotes, getting the most out of you can financially from a relationship. But I think she's also promoting having realistic expectations. If you're just starting out with somebody, he might be trying to play the long game with you. He might have gotten you tickets farther away because he wanted to take you to Nobu or, Mastori's or something like that on Friday or Saturday. And he's like, in order to afford two dates, I have to kind of ease back on the basketball date. But it's like, a lot of you don't get you, a lot of you block your blessings, and you really don't get what you could out of a situation, even if you are going into it financially, because you just know how to act. I never seen somebody try to finesse somebody that you're playing, like literally playing them on TikTok, trying to embarrass them on TikTok, and different things like that. It's like, where did y'all learn how to finesse? Where did y'all learn how to finesse? It just doesn't make any sense to me. So, these are something that I feel like, you guys should think about or not think about, but it's just my opinion on how people are kind of carrying these like first date, second date situations, like the Cheesecake Factory lady, or people that just don't want to get out of the car if it's a chain restaurant, or refuse a date if it's a chain restaurant on a first date and stuff like that. All right, let's get into this next topic here, RuPaul's memoir, and the subsequent tour. So RuPaul is putting out a memoir about his life, and he's on tour right now, promoting the book. And it's just, I don't know, I'm excited to read it. He talks about a lot of experiences. He's spilling tea in the book. I hope he really gets into the whole Drag Race situation. With the beginning cast that they started out with, the hair and makeup people that he started out with, and then who they have now, and what kind of happened in the transition of that. And just kind of like being open and honest about the situation. I know people, he has that song Blame It on the Edit, and so many queens kind of paint RuPaul in a bad light because they came on the show. It wasn't what they expect. I'm talking about RuPaul's Drag Race right now, for those that are confused. But they came on the show. It wasn't what they expected. And they kind of had a sour taste in their mouth for production and for Ru. When in actuality, a lot of these people, and it's no shade, should have never been on TV in the first place. And it's not because they weren't talented, it's just because mentally they were not in a place to be in a really hardcore competition show. I think RuPaul's Drag Race is one of the hardest competition shows out there because not only do you have to look great, a lot of times you have to make your own outfits. You have to come up with lines. It's like being a drag performer is basically being an all-around entertainer. And having to do that on the spot for different challenges, like week after week, day after day, is very difficult, and it's also a pressure cooker for a lot of people. So honestly, I know TV sets and production like aren't always the best, especially for people's mental health. But I don't know if that's something that can be blamed completely on Rue. But either way, I really want to see what he talks about in this memoir. And I really want to like understand what he's talking about in this memoir. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot that went on that he probably never talks about. I mean, being a kid from Virginia to grow up to be a club kid in New York, and then parlay that into a what, 40 or 50 year career. There's got to be a lot there. So I'm really excited to either read that or audiobook it. I haven't decided how what version I'm going to get it in, but it's definitely a story worth listening to. All right, let's get into this next topic here, the LSU versus South Carolina basketball scuffle. So the Southern Eastern Conference women's basketball, it's March Madness for those that don't know. So this is a kind of a sportsy topic. So don't get mad at me. Some of y'all be like, no sports. I'm like, listen, we have 10% male audience and a lot of them like sports. So we have our sports report with J-Rob. But in addition to that, when sports topics really, touch the fray of what we talk about, I try to put them in there too, just to mix it up a little bit, okay? So, LSU and South Carolina had a heated tournament battle over the weekend, and South Carolina ended up winning. But before they ended up winning, there was a little scuffle on the floor. And we love Dawn over here. The South Carolina coach is Dawn, and she's a Philly fan, and she's an Eagles fan in particular. So I really like her. And they had an undefeated season this year. And then of course that means they won all 16 of their Southern Eastern Conference games as well. But this is the thing. When it comes to women's basketball, I think people don't understand how competitive it is. I think it's just as competitive as the guys, as men's basketball. And they get into little scraps here and there too, and it's really not that big of a deal. I think women, no matter what they do in sports and corporate and science and technologies and development and software, they're always expected to not be as competitive as their male counterparts when that's just not the case. These kids, they fight for this. They're student athletes. Like a lot of them will go on to play in the WNBA or overseas or whatever. And these are the creme de la creme of, women's basketball, women's college basketball right now. So they're really fighting to prove that. And not that I don't see a problem with it. Both teams did come out and make a statement against the violence portion, of course. But I feel like, it is what it is. We gotta let the ladies, sometimes act out their frustrations just like you would if it was a high pressure men's basketball game. That's all I'm saying. All right, and then this last topic here, the Real Housewives of New Jersey trailer came out. And it basically exposed the fact that Teresa Giudice may be broke. So let's get so the let's go back to the start. So the trailer basically shows everything that's coming up next season. It has been rumored that Melissa and Teresa did not film together because they have heard our cries as fans that we do not want the Melissa Teresa beef anymore. We don't want to hear about it. We don't want to see it on film. We don't want to see Teresa fighting with Joe. Like the fans are completely over that storyline, that battle, those fights. We're completely over it. So the tea is that Melissa and Teresa do not film together. Also, we revealed on the Instagram page, and it's kind of common news now, Jackie Goldschlager has switched sides from hanging out with Margaret and Melissa and them to now hanging out with Jennifer Aiden and Dolores and Teresa. So she kind of switched sides. These are things we already knew, but it's, being shown in the trailer. Then we have Teresa crying, and then we have Dolores basically saying, things are not good over there. Things are not good in her home. And basically, Margaret tells her husband over the phone that it's being spread around Jersey that, Teresa is broke and Louie has drained her accounts. And the whole kind of cast is reacting to this information. And they're basically saying, you know, every time I call Teresa, like she's crying, like things are not going well. And it's just like, ooh, first of all, everybody knew Louis was like the weirdest thing. Like when they had their wedding special and he was kind of talking about his past and the things that he's been through, et cetera, et cetera. I was just kind of thinking to myself, like, what is going on with Louis right now? You know, like what is going on with Louis and why is he not able to explain what he does for work? I feel like many cast members asked him directly what he does for work and he was not able to answer it. And then the whole prenup thing, when Teresa was like, we don't need a prenup. I don't believe in that. My love bubble, da 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 da. And I was just like, any responsible man in his upper 40s that's marrying a woman in her upper 40s would get a prenup. And here's why. You have assets at this point. Both of you guys have kids that you're coming into the marriage with, if nothing else than to protect your children, to make sure they have what they need. You know, all of Teresa's kids are going to college in the next few years. Gia just finished college, but I think Gabrielle is in college. Melania is going to go, I think, this year or next year. And then the little one, Adriana, I cannot believe I remembered all their names off the top of my head. Whoa, baby. the things that I remember, right? So then Adriana, I believe she's just had like a 16th birthday or 17th birthday. So she's right there. So it's like you have college to pay for. You have, you know, futures to invest in. You can't afford to not get a prenup. And it just always came off so shady to me that he just could never explain what he did for a living. And I was just like, something don't seem right, Louis. Like something does not seem right about your finances. And I could not put my finger on it. But now hearing the rumors and, you know, what's being insinuated by the trailer that he drained her accounts trying to do these like businesses and stuff, I completely believe it. You know, Teresa got a lot of flack for doing that. She and Holiday line and this and that and the third. But I think a lot of the girls are doing these lines for, you know, quick cash because she is going to pay them up front, whether they sell clothes or not. And it's a good look to kind of pull in money. Ethical? We could debate if it's ethical or not, but it kind of would put the pieces together as far as why she's been doing these little, you know, meet and greet things. She's going on tour with Carlos King. You know, it's like, why are you doing these little things? And then it's like, okay, I see why she's doing it because of the financial situation that Louis left her in. So, you know, crazy. I would love to know what you guys think about this in the comments, but these are the trending topics for this week. Stay tuned for our sports report.
Hello, hello, hello out there, and welcome to the sports update with J-Rob. Today I'll be covering both the NFL and the NBA. Let's get started with NFL news. The Denver Broncos have informed quarterback Russell Wilson that he will be released on March 13th when the new league year opens. By releasing Wilson, the Broncos are taking a $85 million cap hit. The cap hit is the largest in NFL history. Also in NFL news, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have re-signed star wide receiver Mike Evans to a two-year contract worth $52 million. $35 million is guaranteed. And finally, in NFL news, longtime ESPN analyst Chris Mortensen has died at the age of 72 after a battle with cancer. Mortensen worked as a senior analyst at ESPN for 32 years. Now let's move to NBA news. In NBA news, Minnesota Timberwolves star Karl Anthony Towns will be sidelined at least 1 month due to a knee injury. He is scheduled to have knee surgery next week. Also in NBA news, Brooklyn Nets guard Ben Simmons will miss the rest of the season due to a back injury. And finally, in NBA news, Los Angeles Clippers guard Russell Westbrook had surgery on his fractured left hand. The Clippers hope he will be able to return before the playoffs begin. And this has been the Sports Update with J-Rob. Have a wonderful week.
right, T Crew. Now we have come to my favorite part of the podcast, the deep dive. This is where I get to shine a light on something that has been on my mind all week or something that I just want to discuss with you all. And tonight and today, we are talking about last night's Oscars. I was thinking about the word tonight and I just said tonight instead of today. But either way, we are talking about last night's Oscars and we got to get into it because it was definitely action packed. First things first, John Cena came out naked to give the award for best costuming. I was like, okay. So that was interesting. And obviously, you know, under the card, he did have a flesh pack. So God forbid if he dropped the card or anything happened, his genitals were covered, but his butt was out. So I was just like, the Oscars doing anything to get these eyeballs, huh? Y'all haven't been the same in ratings since that slap I see. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So then Jimmy Kimmel hosted. And you guys know how I feel about Kimmel. Like lately, he just kind of rubs me the wrong way. You know, I'm happy that he's against Trump. But at the same time, it's just like, he just rubs me the wrong way sometimes. Like I just don't always like his comedy. And last night was a prime example when he joked about Robert Downey Jr.'s sobriety. So Jimmy Kimmel's on, he's hosting, he's telling his jokes. And of course, the biggest awards of the night, he would kind of go around the room and kind of pick fun at the nominees for the biggest awards of the night, right? The celebrities, the main actors, the people that everybody know, So it's basically just like him kind of doing a little roast before everything kind of kicks off and these people are celebrated. So he talks about Robert Downey's addiction. And I was just like, oh, God, like there's just certain things to me that just come off so tired. One of them in comedy is somebody's physical appearance. And the other is kind of poking fun at like their deepest, darkest shame. Like if somebody's been married a ton of times and you bring up their marriages, it's like obviously they keep getting married because they believe in love, right? So it's not like they're a one and done. There's a reason why they're doing the things that they're doing. So I don't know. It was just like a lot. I don't know if Kimmel is like my favorite host anymore. I don't know who they should get, but I feel like they should get somebody else next year. I don't really want to see him come back again. Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas won for best song of the year. And it was What Was I Made For from the Barbie movie. I think that was Barbie's big win of the night. I don't think Barbie got anything else that it was nominated for, which is sad. I feel like it was highly women driven, super feminist. And I just think that made a lot of people uncomfortable. And so I didn't really expect it to do much at the Oscars because it really hasn't done much all award season, no shade. So that's just kind of where I was with that. But shout out to Billy and Phineas. Ariana Grande presented the award and she seemed super happy for her friend. So we love that. Emma Stone won for best actress, which was kind of like a shock to a lot of people. But Emma Stone has really been putting in the work. And although Poor Things wasn't for me, I couldn't get through the movie. A lot of people really enjoyed it. It was definitely out of the box. It was something really different. It was basically like Frankenstein's creature come to life, which was Emma Stone. And she had to pretty much like navigate the world as like a Mod Podge human. Like it was really interesting, but at the same time kind of like off-putting a little bit, and I just, you know, it wasn't for me. But I see the appeal and I think she's really stretching herself in her last few projects, and happy to see her win her first Oscar. Or actually, I don't know if that's her first Oscar, but I think this is her first Best Actress. I think she might have gotten an Oscar for Supporting Actress, I'm not sure. Oppenheimer was the biggest winner of the night. They won Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, Male, and Best Picture. And you guys know I have no problem with that. I really liked Oppenheimer. I thought it was really good. It really just like speaks to the shadiness of our country, and just the things that people have done over time, to basically just try to eradicate the you know, I hate to say war crimes, but try to eradicate and rewrite history, right? Like, they wanted to rewrite history. And I think Oppenheimer was, you know, it was a great telling of a true story where this guy can kind of regain some of his validation as a scientist and as a person. You know, it talks about what he was told, talks about how they tried to throw him under the bus afterwards because they wanted to, like, wipe away their dirty shame of, you know, what the bombs ended up doing to people. Like, it was really good. I don't want to ruin it. It's on Peacock now if you still haven't seen it. It is a long watch, but very worth watching. But let's get to the part we all want to talk about right now, and that is the win of my boo, Divine Joy Rudolph. And she won for Best Supporting Actress for Holdovers. Now, Best Supporting Actress for Holdovers is a huge deal. Danielle Brooks was also in the category. And she was nominated for The Color Purple, but she was just super supportive of Divine. I loved what Divine got up there and said. You know, she's been wanting to change herself. She's been trying to mold herself into the actress that she thought she had to be to win at the Oscars, you know, to win the Golden Globes, to do the things that she's done. And she just got there and said, you know, all I had to do was be myself. It was such a bold message. First of all, we are in Women's History Month. As a woman, it was empowering. As a Black woman, it was three times as empowering. And then as a Black woman of a certain size, I was four times empowered because, you know, we are just told as Black women that are full figured, you don't fit the beauty standard. You are not the standard of beauty. Like, it's pounded into us. People will post pictures and people can't even enjoy wearing like nice outfits or different sets or whatever. It's always, maybe you shouldn't put that on, or that doesn't look good on you, or, you know, everybody can't wear everything. This is a comment that's, you know, always made to full figured women. And it's just like, for her to get up there in all her glory, beautiful custom Louis Vuitton gown that she had on, just stunning. I think it was periwinkle or like sky blue or something like that. It looked great on stage. She came like a winner, baby. She was dressed like a winner and she got the win. But yeah, she just looked amazing. I loved what she said. And I'm just really, really happy for her. Like, this is definitely her moment right now. And we love to see it. It's just like when I look at the biggest winners of the night. So we have Robert Downey Jr., we have Emma Stone, we have Chillin Murphy, and then we had Divine Joy. So I'm just like, why don't we have more diversity, right? Nothing gets Oppenheimer. Would I have loved to see Domingo Coleman win? Yes. Rustin was amazing. I would have loved to seen him take home Best Picture as well, because I just thought that was produced by the Obamas. That movie was really, really good. And it's truly the story of someone who was swept under the rug because of their gender identity and because of who they choose to love, right? They completely erased his legacy until now from history because he was a gay Black man. Rustin is also really good. It's on Netflix if you haven't seen that. So, you know, all these movies are good. All these movies are great. But it just seems like the underrepresentation, Divine is the 10th woman, the 10th Black woman to win Best Supporting Actress of all time. Only 10 women have won this award in the past. And this is what I'm saying about understanding diversity and what it means to really review these films, enjoy these films, but also go to the box office, because when these films are box office hits, they can't be denied. They have to at least be reviewed. And so often Black movies just don't get the numbers at the box office. And then when it comes for award season, everybody's like, oh, they're discriminatory. And some of the practices are very discriminatory, but I think we really have to vote with our feet. American Fiction was not even in all theaters. So that just lets me know that it wasn't selling. American Fiction was a great movie. It was a really, really good movie. It was satirical. It was poignant. It made, you know, but at the same time, American Fiction poked fun at the Oscars. It poked fun at the Golden Globes. It poked fun at all these white-led review boards that are supposed to be reviewing and critiquing Black art. And sometimes they just don't get it. You know what I mean? They just don't understand the nuances. They just don't get it. And because they don't get it, they don't see it for the masterpiece that it is, which is why you need diversity on these boards, which is why you need other people on these boards, because at the end of the day, that is what is going to cultivate somebody in the room, you know, poking their hand up and being like, yes, when he was talking about, you know, wearing a do-rag and getting shot and all these things as he produced this kind of comedical book, there are people in the room that enjoy reading that kind of satire and that kind of like power BMF. Ain't nothing wrong with it, but people that enjoy that kind of gang life fiction from African-American artists and producers and creators, it pokes fun at them. And these people were sitting there probably thinking, oh, this is me. You know, I'm the woman in the Hamptons who likes to read a good crime novel that I think is ripped from the streets. You know what I mean? Lord have mercy. But y'all do. You do. You like it. You enjoy it. It just is what it is. So I didn't expect it to win Best Picture, but I was hoping, you know, it did win Best Screenplay. American Fiction did win Best Screenplay, so I was happy to see that. But, and this is why, you know, it's not to say we have to disenfranchise ourselves from the Oscars and from the Golden Globes and from the white award shows, but it does make sense to also invest into ours, BET, the NAACP Awards, Jason Lee created an awards, the Impact Awards. Like, I think that, you know, people should show them. People should really show them, because this is what really kind of goes into the boards of people that are made up of people that really that look like us and that will understand the projects and the nuances and the things that we have going on more than possibly other groups who are going to miss it completely. So those are my thoughts on that. I feel like I say that every award season, but it's just worth saying, you know, you can't not show up to the BET Awards, you know, 10 or 15 years in a row and then be like, why am I not being celebrated? No one is celebrating me. You don't show up for the people that want to celebrate you. You know, you don't show up for the people that want to celebrate you. So there you have it. All right, T-Crew, this has been the deep dive this week. Stay tuned for our outro comments. All right, T-Crew, this is my least favorite part of the podcast where I have to say goodbye to you. I just want to thank you guys for sharing the reels, listening to the podcast, sharing the links. You know, the reels are really, really doing well. And I'm trying to find a way to monetize from this. But for now, it's just amazing that you guys are watching and listening to the podcast. It really, really helps to grow our small community. Convict the cops that killed Breonna Taylor. We won't stop until she gets the justice that she rightly deserves. Have a beautiful day or night whenever you're listening. And I love you for listening. Bye.